Good evening. This is Nicole. We're Roman Investigators of the Paranormal. This is Paranormal Radio. Paranormal Investigator Radio. I just totally messed that one up. I'm sorry. We didn't have an intro.
It's playing, but we can't hear it.
Oh, okay. I'm used to being able to hear it.
Welcome to Paranormal Investigator Radio on Tuesday, April whatever 18th. I'm one of the co-speakers tonight by the name of Peter. And we also have...
This is Kevin.
This is Nicole.
My name's Mike.
Good to see you, Mike.
Thank you. I'm keeping my identity a secret because... The show is getting really weird.
That may be, but we have two important questions tonight we were emailed about.
That's right.
Should really? We cover them first, or do we want to talk about nonsense for a half hour and then?
No, we'll cover them first. He reached out to us this morning and asked, so we can do that. Do you have the questions, or not?
No, I was sort of like segueing. Into
okay. It.
My name is Mike.
Okay.
I am from France.
We have Dave B. from Denver had a few questions. The first one is, what is a shadow person and how is it different, if there's a difference, from seeing what the layman would consider a ghost?
Why don't you take this one, Mike?
Come on, Mike.
Don't everybody jump out at once with an answer. I was actually waiting to see if Pete had something to say about the whole thing.
The difference between a shadow and a spirit, right? Is that what the gist is?
A shadow person and a ghost. It's
okay. Different. I don't know. Do we know anything?
It's pretty much what you believe it to be. I mean,
That could fall in either category.
There's a lot of people like to portray shadow people as being evil entities because they're black. You know, the dark and... You know, visibility. That's the way you're seeing them.
Right.
And I don't think that they're, you know, necessarily evil. It's just they don't have enough energy to actually portray themselves as a full-blown apparition. You can only see a shadow.
I think a shadow person is a form of a ghost. Maybe just not, like Kevin said, it has enough energy to manifest itself to a more visible form.
So I wasn't trying to be like a jerk, but to establish, are we saying a ghost is a residual and spirit is an intelligent? Is that the definition we're going to define shadow people within? Because I would say that a shadow would fall under residual. I would see that more as just something stuck in time happening. Because usually when people catch them, it's the same places. Like growing up as a kid, I saw shadow people all the time, and they all had their specific movement, and it was just back and forth, back and forth. They were doing their own thing. Like we always say, a residual haunting, it's just frozen time. Something's just caught, energy's just trapped, it's just repeating itself. I guess if it's interactive with you, then it would be a spirit, and then I don't know what you would really define a shadow person as. Does that make sense? Where I'm trying to...
Yeah.
You can't really see it because it's just energy happening, but I'm sorry, Mike.
Mike's going to weigh in now. Oops, that microphone's a little too close to my face.
No.
It kind of looks like a bad 70s porn movie.
The people walking by the window are enjoying this.
Yeah, they are. Like, oh, yeah, there's some action going on here.
Hell, we're voting. I'm going to watch this.
Yeah, I just hope everyone out and voted tonight for their primary, if their primary is tonight. I know New York's is tonight. Sure if that's the same across the nation, but
hopefully they let you register for the party you were registered in.
Yeah, there you go. My take in the whole thing with the shadow people versus ghosts versus spirits, I think it's all one and the same. I think it's just how it presents itself. I'm not really if I agree with it being residual versus being intelligent, because one investigation that Pete and I did with the Camrod and Church Pete, that's where I had my real first big experience. We were down at the altar and looking up into the balcony, and we sort of noticed a shadow, some darkness forming in the corner. And we kept asking questions, and more darkness formed. And eventually we looked and it formed into the shape of a person. And then it ran across the whole length of the balcony. Now there's two big windows up there with light coming in from the outside because it was close to the street and there were some street lights. And it blacked out the windows as it ran by the windows and ran to the entrance of the balcony, which has a staircase. And you can hear it go right down the staircase. It says, boom, boom, boom. And then Peter and I are like, all right, he's going to go open the door and take a look. But to me, I don't know if that was residual. That was something, it seemed to me, that was starting up. It was forming. It was shaping. And it was meant for us to see. I think it can be intelligent. I think it is some form of a spirit, ghost, one and the same. There's a lot of people talk about these shadow people, men in hats, and all this kind of stuff. There's some pretty wild theories, but so far that's pretty much been my experience. Anyone else?
So you would definitely remove evil from dark.
Yeah, I would definitely remove evil. I mean,
because that's probably what people fear. Oh my God, it's black. It has to be satanic or evil.
Because, blackness is portrayed even in Hollywood. It's like scary ghosts are always, black or dark colored. And that's just what people think of first. So I would take evil right out of the equation. I mean, it's the same concept we've been running with, is if somebody's evil in life, they're going to be evil in death. So could a shadow person be evil? Yeah, if they're a terrible person in life, and now they're manifesting themselves as a shadow in death, they could still possibly be evil, but I wouldn't say that all of them are. I agree with Rich, is, maybe some can be residual, some can be intelligent. It's much like apparitions. You can see an apparition that follows residual in nature, in which it just follows the same thing over and over again, or there's intelligent.
Since we're never kosher, I'm going to give you a little quick story of one of these investigations we did years back. It's the home of a quote-unquote Gothic minister who ended up being a very racist person. And one of the things he said was, there's a little kid, he can stay here, but there's a black ghost up there, a black shadow, he has to go. I don't want that in my house. I'm like, wow, that's awful racist of you. The kid can stay, but the black shadow has to go? It's not like we can get rid of them. And then, you find the drug paraphernalia around the house, and it's like, you could have at least hid that before we came in, but, so...
Just to cover our bases here, when we're saying black is evil in movies, that is not what we're saying.
No, 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 no.
What is it that you're
negativity.
Saying?
Negativity.
I think essentially, if ghosts and spirits are in a different dimension, that somehow, when they somehow enter into this dimension, such as apparitions or shadows or voices or whatever, I think they can take on different forms. And maybe essentially the black shadow is a weaker form of a spirit, and an apparition is possibly a stronger form of a spirit. It's gained more energy, or the spirit's become much more sophisticated where it can actually show itself. Not really sure why a spirit would want to show itself versus not showing itself. I'm not really sure what a spirit has to gain in that, but maybe making itself be known. But many times when people see apparitions, it's usually completely unplanned. They're walking around and there's one walking out the door or something like that. So it's just kind of odd that they don't really want to show themselves. They're almost like they're elusive, and they're apparitions. And some of you catch one sometimes on camera, but I mean, it's not like you see them walk around all the time. I mean, I've seen more shadows. I mean, when we did an investigation up in the northern part of New York State, up in Woodgate, we saw that little boy in the hallway. That was a complete black shadow. He was interacting with us throughout the night, and then he formed right in the hallway, walked into the door of the bedroom where we were all kind of sitting around on the bed and the floor and looked at us. We couldn't see any eyes or anything, but he stood there, and then you could see him move on into the other bedroom where most of the activity was going on. So, again, I mean, I think they can be residual, they can be intelligent. Maybe they just don't, have you ever seen the movie Ghost when Patrick Swayze crosses over and these other ghosts are moving things and he can't, and he's getting a little lesson on how to be a ghost and push things? For all intents and purposes, maybe that's kind of a realistic thing in so many ways without being really hokey about it in the movie. But
That's one of the movies which portrays him as evil, is because at the end when those black spirits come to take the guy on to hell.
Yeah, yeah. The demons. But, you know, the whole thing about it was demons is, I mean, demons is like a word that reality TV has got pretty much focused in people's minds, so if something happens to them, they get scratched. Or if they hear a bang in the middle of the night, it's a demon. We had a girl call us about the investigation. She said, I have a demon in my room. I'm leaving a demon. He scratched me. There's a scratch and it's got three lines. It's a demon. What? Where'd you hear that? Oh, it was one of those paranormal TV shows. I'm like, yeah, I think you should stop watching TV for a while. But, yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, one of these days we're going to find the answer. I think every day we're getting a little bit closer, but we're just not there yet.
If you'd like to weigh in on shadow people, 1-888-429-5471. 1-888-429-5471. Now, I can tell you, as somebody who spent hundreds of hours watching shadows move in the house I grew up in, which will eventually be leading into Nicole's second question there, but they were always, like, pointed. Now that you bring up the movie Ghost, they always had, like, that rigid triangle pointy shape as they moved.
Yep.
There were some tall ones, medium, and they just moved back and forth. And I used to just sit there as a kid watching them, like, oh, God, I really got to go to the bathroom. And they're, like, right next to the bathroom. I don't want to go. And it's like, do I use the garbage in my room or do I brave on and go into the bathroom? And
I think they're harmless. I really do. I think I don't know of any cases where people are attacked by shadow people, you know. They shouldn't even get their own bathroom now. We should have a men's room, a woman's room, a transgender bathroom, and a shadow people bathroom. I mean, all fair and honesty.
It's all like that.
Yeah, I mean, shadow people have rights too, you know?
So what is Slenderman? Does that fall in the shadow people with the black-eyed children, or is that like a different form of mythology
like
here?
It's almost like a cult thing.
It's like an urban legend thing going on.
Yeah.
Bigfoot.
A lot of hooey, I don't read.
Bigfoot, urban legend? Oh, how dare you?
I forgot to tag you, Rich. I saw something the other day.
Who's Rich?
Oh, Mike.
There was a massive article there on Gigantopithecus, one of the big science magazines online, and I forgot to tag you over the link.
I would have liked to see that, Gigantopithecus.
Yeah. Oh, they were saying that they had the link. Oh, my.
You're going to make me start stumbling. Gigantopithecus blackie is the terminology. You know,
we're going to get in trouble here tonight. 1-888-429-5471.
The Bigfoot is just a creature of nature. And, you know, paranormal or not, I think it's just a creature of nature. And, you know, you can call it paranormal all you want, but I don't think there's any aliens involved. I just think it's a being, you know.
2 hours from now, Walmart, Rome, New York, you'll see some Gigantopithecuses and reptilians and greys.
You know, maybe the ones with their boobs on their back. Did you ever see that?
Yeah, maybe the beta reticulans and.
Gosh, good lord.
I think we move on off of shadow people.
Did we answer the shadow people question? Okay.
Shadow. Yep. We have a second question.
Come on, Dave. Answer us back and make sure we're good on this, because we got to move on to something else. Because
we could talk about that game from Puffikoff.
That game, the pit cherry pie. I knew I was going to screw it up.
So the second question, he says, I was re-listening to some past shows, and several times you have suggested not to investigate your own house. Can you go more into depth as to why you shouldn't? I know the team did Peter's house without him, but I don't understand why not if he is a professional as well.
I'm a professional?
That's right. There must be another Peter in that group.
There's quite a few Peters. Anyway, I'll give you the quick answer to that. And this is the number one question that we get at presentations or lectures or conventions. If you have been dead, well, not you specifically, because you're obviously alive and listening to us. I mean, we may be killing you, but we're not. If something's in your house that's been dead for 100 or 200 years, and all of a sudden it can communicate with you, it's not going to shut up. Think of it from that aspect. Until you open, quote unquote, the door, it didn't know that it could talk to you. And especially if you get some chatty Cathy, you're in trouble. So that's why we always say, we come in, we do the investigation, we temporarily open that door, we get what we get, we leave, we're done. Like when they did my house, I was there actually, I was there. I didn't participate, but I curiosity did get the better part of me. And when they were actually using the Melmeter and a specific coat hanger in the basement triggered the Melmeter off, like with weird readings, and there's no electricity around it, even I'm standing there like, I knew it. I knew it. It's that damn coat. No. But like the childhood house I grew up in, David's childhood house, the Leonard DiProspero family house, I would never go back in there today. As much as I would like to, knowing what I know now, knowing what I've seen now, I mean, we've done a lot of research, we've done a lot of field testing. If there's something that I was able to get rid of, I don't want that thing reattaching to me. I don't want that thing knowing, oh, he's back, he opened the door, yay! You know, I endured 24 years of that before we moved out of the house, so I really, me personally, I mean, if you're an investigator, you do what you want, but as far as I'm concerned, I don't want 20 more years of that in my life. But.
No, and that leads into another question. We were watching those videos today, actually a little while ago today, about spirit communication, and some of these people, man, they get these spirit boxes. And to them, it's like a toy. It's like every night they're on their spirit box talking to something. And it's almost like using an Ouija board constantly, you know? You're continuing talking and talking. Then you're going to start talking with something that you don't want to be talking with, and it's going to disguise itself as something else. And then sometimes these people, like, I know, like, Huff Paranormal, he had some really big issues. I mean, he's like, I think, 7 days a week he's doing the spirit box thing, trying to advance the field, new technology and stuff, and I completely respect that. But I think he spends a lot of time doing that, and every once in a while, he gets hit with something bad, you know? So I think people need to be understand and be careful with this stuff, especially doing it in your own home. You know what I mean? That's supposed to be your safe place. And then you basically start opening that communication, and I think they can come to where you are, your home, you know, and that's not a good thing.
Not that we're the John Zaffis fan club, but you have to take a page from his own playbook. I mean, he doesn't bring any of those haunted objects in his house. I believe he said he starts in a little shed outside where he consecrates them, seals them, gets rid of the voodoo, then moves it into his museum, which is not really his house. So that stuff's really never going with him into his house. I mean,
yeah,
like if we build the box,
attached,
we're...
But it's down a hallway. It's its own complete...
Like, I don't plan on keeping that box in my house that we're building, because if something really does attach to it, I'm not bringing that into where I live.
So you're leaving my office.
Well, you're only here 8 hours a day, so that's... If I open up the third layer of hell, I don't want that at home. I get enough of that. But no, just basically, look at it that way. That's what you wanted to do. If you want to communicate with spirits like the Huff level and you don't care that you open that in your own house or want to talk continuously, you know, albeit my personal choice, I just wouldn't go back there. I just wouldn't. I don't want that because I've seen the other side of what that can do. And I think it probably actually bothered me more now knowing the stuff we've seen. The worst stuff that's been in Hollywood since I've been a kid.
Ugh.
All that combined with the real life stuff we've seen, and it'd be like, oh my God, I'd probably have a heart attack just thinking about what could possibly happen that wouldn't even happen. But
Hollywood just ruins the whole paranormal thing. It takes so much value and turns it into this hero villain thing where the ghost becomes the villain, the monster, and there's got to be some hero that's got to put it back in its box or destroy it or something. And, you know, and even some of the reality TV shows are just kind of, I don't know. When it comes to reality TV, you're hearing and seeing things, but you're not there. So how much of it is real and how much of it is fake? Because it wouldn't be very hard to fake some of that stuff. You know, edit something in, edit something out. So, you know, it's just tough. Until you actually do it yourself and do the investigation to see this stuff and experience it like you grew up in that home, you know, I guess you have a whole different outlook on it.
So gather around, kids. I'm about to scare you with a true life tale from the life of Peter. I was maybe 12 years old at the time. had to get up and take a tinkle. It's probably 2 or 3 in the morning. The one thing you got to realize about the house is great-grandpa died in that house. Great-grandpa was 94 years old when he died. You know how he lived to be 94? Because he used to mind his own damn business. That's how people live to be old. You just mind your own damn business. But he always wore a yellow and brown plaid shirt. And he was old. He was 94 years old. He always looked old. I mean, I was a kid. He was always old. And he died when I was about 9-ish. I probably should have been sad about him dying, but I was probably more happy with the fact that I got 5 days off from school. Because, you know, that was still back in the day when wakes were 3 days, then a funeral, and then you had a mourn, and then you had the weekend, and then you weren't allowed to do anything on the weekend. You weren't allowed to... Okay, so I got up to go to the bathroom, and I did my business. There I am, I'm washing my hands. Look in the mirror. He's in the mirror, standing right behind me, wearing that God-loving plaid shirt, just looking at me, with whitish color skin, just like you'd see in a horror movie. Fear gripped me. I peed a little again, but I wasn't near the toilet. I looked down, and I'm like, oh, please, I'm sleeping, I'm sleeping, I'm sleeping, I'm sleeping. I look back up, I'm like, he's still in the mirror. Like, what the hell? They're supposed to disappear when you look away. He's still in the mirror. I peed a little more. I turned her, I closed my eyes this time for a good 30 seconds, for a minute, just frozen in fear, gripped with fear. I'm just standing there. I'm like, I'm not seeing this. I'm not seeing this. Finally, I opened my eyes. They're still friggin' standing there. It's like, oh my God. Why is he still standing? So then it's like, I got to turn around and look. I got to turn around and look. I slowly turn. Slowly. Fear's gripping me. I pooped a little. I turn around. There's nothing there. My mind clears. I'm like, oh, jeez, I knew I wasn't seeing things. As soon as I spin back around, he's in the mirror. Why are you in my mirror? But the next time I closed my eyes, poof, he was gone. I never, ever forgot that. Why wouldn't he leave my mirror?
Wow.
I'm sorry. Was that a little too dramatic?
I've never heard this story before.
You should do those audiobooks.
Yeah.
The Stephen King ones.
That was great.
It was such a weird bathroom, too. It was like, yeah, probably like a 900 square foot bathroom. I mean, it was like, I don't even. So when the Bosnian guy bought the house and turned the 3-family house into 6, I know how. He was probably able to get 3 bathrooms out of that one, which was mostly just empty hall and a washing machine. Not a dryer in there, it just had a washing machine. Dryer was at the other end of the house, but apparently, ooh, maybe the EMF from the wash machine was enough to make great-grandpa grow into this. So if you take anything from this, folks, mind your own business. That is the key to longevity. Mind your business.
And 2 alcoholic beverages a day.
Actually, he did. He used to drink wine and roll his own cigarettes. Not the funny California cigarettes. He used to just use tobacco from a can and... Am I allowed to call them California cigarettes? I'm sorry if I insulted anybody.
Colorado cigarettes.
Colorado, I'm a Colorado. Red apples are California, right? If I remember Pulp Fiction properly. It's a cold, dark, rainy night. You happy, Dave? This is what you're getting. Now you're getting all the Leonard household families that was cold and rainy night. But that's just central New York. We only get 14 days of sun.
Yeah, you know what? Colorado gets over 300 days of sunlight a year.
We don't.
Those people don't have a vitamin D deficiency. A couple years ago, I went to the doctor and got diagnosed with a vitamin D deficiency. Like, how does one get a vitamin D deficiency? You're not spending enough time in the sunlight. How the hell am I supposed to? I mean, whatever sunlight there is. On the days we get sunlight, I'm usually out there for some period of time.
Would the moon suffice? Can you get vitamin D from the moon?
I don't think so. It had to be the sun.
Lord knows I burned my scalp on Sunday. Good Lord.
So I was doing 50,000 IUs of vitamin D once a week. So
I'm sure there's a joke in there that we can't say on the radio. But
yeah.
Is that healthy?
I don't know. It was a prescription. can't go buy that much vitamin D in a...
I had the same problem, and I had some massive pills that you had to take.
Yeah, these are big honking horse pills for vitamin D.
George?
I have a deficiency, you know?
George Pappard died from a vitamin C poisoning. Took too many pills. Be careful with that.
Everything's, well, yeah.
That's what took out Hannibal.
Yeah.
Vitamin C.
This was a script, but I don't know how much is safe and how much is not, but... Yeah, some people take too much of stuff. Vitamins, Advil, Tylenol, beef jerky.
THC.
Wow, that was really loud.
Excuse me. Those scary ghost stories and then they drop something.
Pete's got us all on edge now.
And I guess we've experienced that. Like, we've gone back to many of the same locations to reinvestigate. And you just, like the Hobart House, you just... Everything that ever happened to you just comes back to your mind immediately. It's like, no matter how much you try forgetting it, they just come back. It's like we do the Rutger Mansions, we always get little Klaus, and he just comes right back. Wait till we bring the portal in there.
Oh, dear Lord.
Little do we know Klaus has a brother and a sister and an aunt and an uncle. And
I tell you what, I'd like to find out what was actually talked or standing right behind me when I was investigating the Herkimer County Jail, the old jail. It just, I don't know, that's one feeling I'll never ever forget. I mean, to be inside my own jail cell, nobody else was in there with me, I shut the door, and you could just feel that there was somebody standing behind you and towering over you, like, you're in my cell, get out.
Well, it could be, what's her name, Roxalana, it's not Roxana, whatever her name was.
Oh, no, she was in the attic.
Is that where they kept her?
Yeah.
Was this Gillette cell? Chester Gillette?
Chester Gillette was two floors above where I was. I was down in the basement, and it was in the men's holding area, it was in the basement. You go one floor, like half a floor up is the women's holding area. And then the next floor up was where Chester Gillette was. And then there was an attic area where Roxalana, I believe her name was, that's where she was held.
Did anybody die in the fire? Do you remember?
I don't believe anyone died in the fire, but they did say that she assisted with putting the fire out because the fire was up there and they kept handing her buckets to run over and throw the water on it.
Because I know when Rich and I were investigating across the street in the courthouse, every time we talked about the fire, we'd get those heebie-jeebies and weirdo feelings and hair standing up. But only when you talked about the arson or the fire.
Yeah.
But I don't remember if anybody died in that.
Couldn't tell you.
It amazes me that a place like a prison would be haunted because those people were kept there against their will in these cells. So when they finally die, why would their spirit go back to the cell? You know what I mean? Unless, well, a couple of reasons. Either they were trapped there for some reason, which I don't truly understand, or it's a safe place because they're bad people. And if they move on, maybe the alternative is not a good place to be. So they're staying in their prisons for safety. Their spirits are. Otherwise, why would you use a spirit? Because we know spirits can come and go and travel around. Why would they want to stay in that jail cell? I mean, obviously, these are people who were adults and lived longer lives and then died. So it's not like they suddenly were murdered and, you know, and all their spirits kind of trying to figure out what's going on. So I just never understood that, you know, like the haunted jails.
Like, well, Al Capone would be in Alcatraz. Why would Al Capone be?
Yeah, mental institutions. Why there when they could go some other places?
Do you think it's self-inflicted, that they don't feel they've suffered enough for what they did?
Maybe in order to get to the light, if you will, they have to suffer more in order to make up for their crimes. So they do that so that they can move on. I mean, this is all hypothetical, granted, but there's got to be a reason why. You know what I mean? I mean, there's some really cool old places that have spirits, and I get that. You know, they used to be like, someone that lived there. But take like the Rucker Mansion, that's the main mansion we go to, the old one that used to be a nursing home. Why would spirits of someone who was a patient there who was treated horribly want to stay there? You know what I mean? unless they don't know how to leave. That's another thing.
The level of intelligence there, I mean, that this is coming. I mean, I have a sister that's developmentally disabled. My grandmother worked at the Rome State School, which was the big custodial asylum in Rome at one point. Right up to they made it a prison in 1980. She worked there from like 19, whatever it was, 40 right on up to 80. And she always used to, the things they did to them kids, she's like, those orderlies, the things, and she used to always like come home crying. She's like, the things they did to them kids. And that's why, like, when we investigator people, oh, we want to go to an asylum, we want to go to, I sort of like feel bad because I have like that little bit of a connection. And I always remember what grandma's like, and it's like, this is a woman who never swore, but the only time she would ever swear in her life was when she would talk about that place and what them people would do to the kids. She's like, they'd hit them, throw them down the stairs, and rape and other stuff. But it's like, the kids that were, and I call them kids, I mean, a lot of them were very old, but they just didn't, their mental capacity, especially then compared to now, they really didn't, I don't want to say they were dumber than dirt, but they just, they were never educated, so... It's just feed me, poop me, clothe me, and that was life. I mean, I'm not to be that blunt and horrible, but that was their life. It's just.
But what happened in human nature over decades or centuries, where now essentially we're more civil and we care and we have more empathy for people who are mentally ill, and we take care of them better. I mean, there's still people, you know, doing bad things, but it seems to me now that we have grown more intelligent and more understanding and more... It's just weird how, if you go back how they used to treat people, even how they used to, like, you know, like cut off people's fingers for stealing, hang them. Now we put them in jail and make sure they eat three meals a day and they get cable TV. You know, we treat them so much better now. What's changed in our human nature that we've developed, gone that way? We've become better to each other versus... How we used to, like, you know, they used to, like, when they used to have wars back centuries ago, where they pour boiling oil down the walls and just you know, burn people alive and
you know,
all that. And they don't, I mean, they just, now they shoot you, and if you're dead, you're dead. It's not, you don't have to be tortured in order to get it. It's just, we've changed so much. I mean,
do you want me to open that can of worms?
I think there's a, people are believing more, and they're getting more, they have more of a conscience now than they did before. Maybe it's more of believing in that whole, the purgatory. You know what I mean? When it passed.
So maybe spirits of the people over the past 10, 20 years, maybe essentially it's coming to the point where even spirits are becoming more intelligent and more empathetic and, you know, moving on and doing things more in life in accordance, living with more of a moral code so that when they do pass, because, you know, everyone thinks because someone died that they're going to be a ghost. And that's not the case. I mean, when my associate's father passed away a couple years ago, I mean, there was no hide or hair of him. I mean, they kept thinking they were getting some messages and some signs, but, I mean, there was nothing there. And that's, you know, a spirit that, like, passed on and was accepted and went on its way. But... I mean, is that kind of the direction things are going in? I mean, are these spirits from a long time ago when the world was a different place and people were treated differently and the moral compass was different?
Well, two things quickly. Like, just look in our own lifetimes. Like, go back to when you were in school. Children with Down syndrome, how they used to be picked on. They were segregated in class. They were kept in their own world. You never really associated with them. Now you see heartwarming, touching story after story, and even just recently, like a girl asked, one of the cheerleaders asked the kid with Down syndrome to the prom, and they're actually allowing, not allowing, but they're actually getting accepted into college, they're integrating into society. That didn't happen 30 years ago when I was a kid. I know I seen it with my own sister. Generations before that were even worse. I mean,
yeah.
You're just seeing people, hey, they're people too, why can't they? Half the people that were in asylum in the 1800s would not be in an asylum today. I mean, the batshit crazy people are always going to be there, but that's... But your one single most event, what changed? Christianity. What I mean by that, you got to go back to one specific institution in America. It was Eastern State Penitentiary, and I think it was 1802-ish, whenever they opened, and they were under strict Christian law. That's what started the betterment for incarceration. They had to get time outside, they had to get food, they had to get religious education to try, what's the word, reforming the criminal. Mm-hmm. And that became the model for, I think the modern system's a little convoluted. Some of these people should be publicly executed, but that's another story. But that's where I think what made us in our country a lot different than England or any other country where they still keep people in chains and chain them to walls, we moved away from that into the Reformation. God says everybody's capable of salvation, so let's give them a chance to be saved. If not, then we'll kill them. But that's always been the American way. I mean, I hate to say it, but that's... But now you're starting to see the other dip in society. Like I said, I don't want to open this can of worms, 1-888-429-5471. Now you see religion being taken out of society, and people are saying, this country's not what it used to be, things aren't the same, everybody's mean, nobody cares about it. Follow the wave. I mean, you can see...
I think religion was a mechanism of control at one time, and even, you know, good families back in the early settler days that would go to church and then go home and beat their kids and, you know, drink heavily. And I just think religion was, I do believe in spirituality. I do believe I am Catholic. I do believe there is a God, whatever form he or she takes. And I believe that there is a devil. I mean, I've seen too much and heard and seen too many things to make me believe not. But the thing is that I believe that mechanism of control, religion, they were the rules. The religion was the rules. You played by that rule. Now people have developed. They have a better moral compass. I mean, there's still wackos out there, as you can see. But people have a moral compass more, and people are, you know, I think just society in general is better, and a lot of these people aren't religious. I think, you know, like churches and stuff, I mean, I think a lot of that stuff's in decline. Like the Catholic Church, it used to be, you know, all the churches were full of people, and now I'm sure there's many of them that basically are, you know, the diocese is like, well, keep this thing open for how much longer?
Because,
you know?
As you're saying, people realize, okay, I need to feed the hungry, I need to clothe the naked, infirm the sick. I mean, it's just, these are just basic moral things we owe each other as a human.
Right.
I mean, but if Nicole and Kevin want to weigh in on that, be my guest.
I don't think you need to go to church to do that, to be honest with you. I mean, I believe in church. I'm Methodist, and I do go. I go, but there are things that we can do morally, you know, that are right, that don't involve the church. Just being a good person. So.
I'm definitely not an overly religious person. I can tell you that right now. But it's all about how you're brought up and just being a good person, basically. It's, I don't know. To me, it's first nature, you know. It's just the way I'm going to be. If somebody needs help, I'm going to help them.
And that's the fireman in you coming out.
Yeah.
Yeah, like but I said, the moral compass, people, is changed. The control of religion, to control people, be good or you'll go to hell. You know, I mean, that's kind of... You know, I mean, that was kind of the thing, the fear.
But
you know?
Conversely, the younger kids growing up now see the total opposite with complete zealotry from other religions. That's the polar extreme. And I think that may help this next generation coming up realize, we need to balance this out a lot better because that's just not going to work out this way.
Yeah, Pete, there's, like, anytime there's a positive, there's a negative, and it has to go hand in hand with it. But the thing is, I think people nowadays are more aware of things, and of course, you know, we as humans have developed technology so much in the past 30 years. It was like one of the biggest growths in the human intelligence over the last 30 years. Now we're all connected so much more with social media, so we can keep tabs on things and people and events and stuff like that. Like if there was a flood down in New Orleans, the only way we would know about it is if it was in a local paper, someone reported it, or if we saw it on the news, if we had TV. Now, we check our phones, it's on Facebook, and more people are, I think, are helping people just from, you know, something simple as a smartphone. Like, I know when there was the Katrina thing, or whatever it was, like, we saw it on Facebook, we made a donation. Because we saw it on the news eventually, but who watches TV really not much anymore. But I think it's people in general. I think the veil of religion is lifting itself, you know, off, and it's people are... I don't know what religion's going to be like in the next 30 years, if there's still going to be one. I'm sure there will, but it's going to be
more spiritually based.
Yeah, yeah. I think people are looking at it that way. They don't have to go to church to be think good and think about God and all that kind of stuff. They just do their thing.
Again, in just perspective, if you 1400s England, if you stole a loaf of bread, they would publicly execute you. Nowadays, you'd be like, oh, I need to give this guy a couple bucks. Let me go buy him lunch or give me, or as you call it, paying forward now out there in
yeah,
the
but
real
is that
world.
The evolution of people, and is the spiritual world evolved like that too as well? Like I said before, why does a spirit stay in a jail cell? What's so comforting about dying, being in prison for 30 years and dying and then going haunting your cell? Yeah, I just, you know, I mean, logically it doesn't make any sense to me.
Maybe it's the way that they're paying for their crimes in the afterlife.
Well, yeah, that too. There's probably dozens of theories of what it is. But, I mean, but of course, when we pass, at least what I've been told, when we die, we gain universal knowledge. The soul goes on and all these questions and things that we don't understand in this, we get answered, so... Maybe not everyone.
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe don't earn that.
I feel blessed having been in the paranormal, and if you're listening to this, you probably feel the same way, that it's helped you grow. Like, we're teaching a class right now, Paranormal 101, and that's what I like to impart upon people. The paranormal journey is your journey. It's you becoming a better person. I don't want to say accepting, but you... experiencing what's out there that's been sheltered from you for ever, because society doesn't want you to pretty much grasp it. I mean, like when I was a kid, you were crazy. Don't ever talk about that. You can watch all those horror movies you want, that satanic crap, but just don't talk about it. That's it.
Well, I think one thing that Rich talked about last radio show was how, getting into the paranormal and the research and everything, it's really calmed your worries of death and life. And it's true. I mean, there's things that I have researched, there's documentaries I've watched, and by the end of it, I'm really like, you know, it doesn't sound all that bad. You know, live your life to, as you've been saying, your moral compass, and, you know, be a good person, do what you got to do to help other people, and just be good. And, you know, when death comes, it's nothing to fear.
It's part of a process.
I could share another one with you, just the weird things that have happened throughout my life. And this was recent. This was the house fire we had
we're
2 years
to be
ago.
Good. Don't scare people.
No, this one's actually inspirational. Dad was a professional fireman. That's what he loved doing. I mean, the saddest day I've ever seen him in his life was the day he had to retire. And he had to retire. He just had heart problems. But my wife was renting out her mother's house, upstairs apartment, and unbeknownst to us, the kid had a pot farm up there, like a major pot farm growing operation that we didn't know about. And her aunt was living downstairs with two young kids. And she come running over. She's like, something's wrong in the house. I heard this massive explosion. She's like, I don't know what happened. There was a massive explosion. And she's got the two kids there naked because she was giving them a bath. She's like, and the power went out. So you know me, naturally, I grab two fire extinguishers off the wall, take off, start running for the house. And I can hear the wood crackling. I'm like, oh, crap, there's a fire somewhere in the house. So there's no lights in there. I get up and finagle my way up to the stairs in the attic, and I get there. And I just, like an idiot, you know, I'm waiting for the critique here from the fireman. I run in there, not even thinking. I run, and I got halfway into the center of the attic, and that's when the heat hit me. There was no fire. There was no, it was just a friggin' oven furnace. All of a sudden, I can hear Dad talking to me. Get down! Drop down! Crawl back! Feel your friend. It's like, I'm getting instructions how to get out of the, and I'm listening. I'm like, all right, I got myself into something I shouldn't be in. I couldn't see the fire. I knew something wasn't right. But it's like, here's somebody guiding that I know and trusted, telling me how to get the hell out of that thing. And then when I think about it afterwards, it's like, what the hell were you thinking? There could have been poisonous gas up there. There could have been electric wires exposed. There could have been all types of... Long story short, what the kid did, he jumped the power from the pole into the house, and they still had... was that knob and tube wiring in the attic? That was what the explosion was. He blew the power thing. and the fire where it started in the wall, where it's connected from the outside to the inside boxes. It ended up burning a hole through the attic and the whole nine yards, but, and I had a little fight with the local fire department because they wouldn't rush right in, but we didn't know it at the time. They had all suit up and mask up because the first guys that went in found the pot farm, and then, you know, me actually being told by the chief, I'm like, if you're not going in, charge a quarter inch, I'm going up there. Calm down. I'm like, give me a hose. But how do you explain these things? I know people say, oh, you're crazy. You're crazy. But that was like specific instructions in a moment of, it's like pretty much almost like the stop, drop, and roll. But, oh. So do I think there's something out there?
Yes. The only critique you have from me on this is, if your house is on fire,
get out.
Get out. Stay out, as we teach all the kids in the elementary schools, and leave it up to the professionals to do it.
I'm a trained idiot, so I'm.
But, I mean, we have so much equipment nowadays that the guys have to put on and get ready just to make sure that they're safe to go in.
They did a fantastic job. They got in there. They laid the tarps down underneath. There were hardly any water damage other than the attic being destroyed, but that was, there's nothing you could do. The heat was just.
And as far as your father talking to you, to us, that's like what we yell at a probie. Probie, if you don't know what that means, means probationary firefighter.
Well, you can call me idiot. I don't care.
Basically, the new guys that don't really know what they're doing yet, you have to yell at them, put them in their place, and I think that's what your dad was trying to do for you. Is he was, at this point, let's say he was a legend in firefighting, and he was trying to tell you what you were supposed to do, and basically tell you to get the hell out of that situation you put yourself in.
See, my intention was get to where the fire was and get the extinguisher on it. Not that it was going to put it out, but slow it down enough that when the guys did get there, we could eliminate, because that was my fear of them losing the house by time. But then once common sense kicked in, it's like, idiot, you don't just run into it. This isn't Medal of Honor territory here. Just
don't be.
Things can happen. And there's plenty of stories like that. Like I've heard things from other firemen that have told me they've been in fires and people have saved them. They don't go into detail. They're like, I don't know how the hell I got out, but I followed somebody. And it's like, well, there's nobody in there with you. And I remember my dad actually talking about that once. He was in the house. There were two of them, and they pulled the hose right out of their hand. Like, they called everybody out. They didn't know he was in the house with the other guy, his backup, and they just pulled the hose out of their hand. So they had to find their way out of an inferno. And he always said, he's like, I don't know how the hell I got out of that house. It's like, you couldn't even see your hand in front of you. Wow. That might be our next book, Fire Spirits. Tales of the Fire.
That's something I would read.
Check around, see if there's any stories. I'm not doing nothing for the next 3.5 months. But
we know a lot of firefighters that might contribute to that.
Police, the same things. I mean, the life-saving things that have happened with some of them. No, I don't know what it was. I put my wallet in my pocket up near my chest, and it stopped a bullet tonight. I mean, I never put my wallet there. Well, if you're listening out there, Spirit, you can come and give me the lottery numbers, and I'll prove to you that it won't change me. Just give me the chance to prove to you it won't change me. Not for the negative.
There was a story that I read recently with a police officer. I could not tell you where it was, but they responded to a building. It was some kind of a studio building, and they responded for a burglary alarm. And basically, when they arrived on the scene, there was a man standing outside the door and waiting to open the door for him. Opened the door. They went inside, went upstairs to where the alarm was coming from. The guy told him down to the end of the hall. And as he got down to the end of the hall, there was a light on in the room. Well, as he approached the room, the light shut off. So he turned on his flashlight. As soon as he turned on his flashlight, all the offices in that hallway, all their lights came on. All their doors open. So this police officer was getting freaked out. He had his partner with him. So there was two guys that are witnessing this happen. All of a sudden, all the lights shut down, and all the doors slammed shut. So So the two officers ran back down the hall to try and find the guy that let him in. And he wasn't at the end of the hall, so they're like, okay, he must be outside. So they ran down the stairs. When they got outside, the guy wasn't there. So they called their dispatch and actually called for dispatch and said, can you call the key holder and tell him to get back here so that we can get back in, because they ran out the door and the door locked behind them. And that's when they were advised by dispatch that the key holder was still 20 minutes out and had not arrived on scene yet. And I guess when the key holder actually did arrive, they told the guy what they had seen and who had let him in earlier. And he said, yeah, that was the old guy. He passed away quite a while ago. But.
Interesting.
Now, I'm sure you have seen on Facebook, was it the mother was dead in the car accident and the baby was drowning and the cop heard somebody yelling help or whatever the story was?
That was
interesting stuff.
A lot. I see a lot of stories about that.
That's all part of the strange world we call the paranormal. Anything that happens beyond the realm of human if we can't explain it, it's paranormal. Let's put it that way. I'm paranormal. I'm stupid and paranormal. But if you ever want to talk to us, or if you are a group, or you want to talk on about something you're doing, a project, a tool, a toy, something, you know, give us a call. We'll put you on the air, 1-888-429-5471. We always like to hear other people banter on. Maybe one of these days we'll talk about the UFOs again. UFOs.
Actually,
and maybe real psychics are coming to Rome, New York in May at the Crypto Paracon. May something through something, what is it, like 12th, 13th?
May 13th and 14th.
May 13th and 14th. Mm-hmm. They will have world-renowned psychics, Rome's most extreme investigation team, and a real Bigfoot. Yes, a real Bigfoot. Check out the poster. You can't wait to see you there. We're kind of setting up quite a few things coming up around the corners here.
Lamplight tours are starting up next month.
We got some irons in the fires. We got the class this weekend if you're in the upstate New York area and you want to attend part two and get some cake.
Thursday night
at the shop. At the finish shop.
Is that cake?
Yeah, I better remember to bring one. I've been pushing that left and right. And if I don't show up with a cake, I'll never forgive myself.
Forget, I'll pick up one.
Then we return to the Hulbert House for another investigation at the end of the month. RIP only event. That's not tickets. It's just a group investigation. So
I can't wait to give the old girl a crack again.
I'm excited. This is the first investigation we've been on in a while.
I'm excited because this is the first investigation I've gotten to do with you guys.
This might be Kevin's last show, then. He might not like us after this.
You're going Saturday, right?
Yep.
Okay. We have other investigations coming up, but essentially, usually when you get through December into April, things slow down a little bit every once in a while. A couple years ago, we had a lot of investigations in the winter. I prefer that they slow down in the winter, just because driving can be treacherous to get to some of these places and investigate.
Yeah.
Rather do it in the spring, summer, or the fall versus doing it in the winter. So, yeah, we have a lot of things going on, and we have a lot of other things that people have reached out to us for events. We're just trying to get a feel of the landscape, see what we want to do, the dates, and you know, other things like that. So, more RIP stuff headed your way soon.
Salem was awesome. We got to see Scott Grunewald from Baron Naked Paranormal get Baron Naked.
Salem,
and you
want
to talk about paranormal.
Oh, that was paranormal.
Salem was a very good time. That was another fine event put on by Mark. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, Mark and Lauren did a fabulous job. And it was nice seeing John Zappas. He hung out with us all week, all the whole day.
I see him all the time.
Oh, lucky. He's nice. What happened, Pete? What was it? Was it Friday night when we got there and we both said, John Zaffis, show yourself, and who walked through the door?
Yeah, I forgot to tell you that. We were walking into the hotel. We're like, if you're here, John Zaffis, you come out and greet us. And just as we walked in, he walked right out of the room he was in. He's like, oh, hey. Like, that's a little too frightening.
We just looked at each other and said, oh my God.
On that note, we are out of time.
Oh.
I thank you for listening to Paranormal Investigator Radio.
joining us for this episode of Paranormal Investigator Radio. Be sure to visit us online at paranormalinvestigatorradio.com. Until next time, happy hunting and stay spooky.